Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Whether you're a brand, large or small business, or an individual, you need customers or clients, and the chances are some of your potential customers are probably listening to this podcast right now. From history,
when Napoleon laid Boulogne for a year,
politics,
if that person is poor, it's a bad neighborhood, then you have the disproportionate police brutality, which is meted out instantly at people of color.
Culture.
Had they written it that Chris called an ambulance for Alice straight away, and we wouldn't have learned about the severity of alcohol withdrawal either. Well done to the writers. Thank you for making a wonderful podcast, but I'd give Rotherham a miss. Bye.
The Rotherham Tourist Board.
Geekdom.
The flag is a graphic symbol, not a verbal symbol. You know, why don't we just write France on the flag? I mean, we laugh when you think of putting a country's name on a flag.
Society or music.
Young people began to turn away from their parents' ethics and their style of dress, and they began to dance to a new type of music.
Roy Field Brown's podcasts are downloaded just under 100,000 times a month. So putting your message here could well be a wise investment. If you have something to hawk, sell, or promote, why not email royfield@gmail.com and hear your product or service promoted to up to 100,000 articulate listeners today.
We are a small secondary college in a country town in northern Victoria, Australia. We believe that we are unique.
My name's Matt Carver, current principal at St. Mary of
when
the Angels.
When we arrived, was an old...
So I've got a podcast which I run through my little school.
Hi, my name is Michaela Brooks. I'm the senior school team leader. My favourite thing about St. Mary's is the students.
So if you are interested in education or just what it's like to be someone who's in a small country town in Victoria in Australia, I'd love you to listen. It's Angels and Angels.
All the second stage tanks now pressurized.
The podcast that I'm working on at the moment and is going to be released sometime in the new year, it's the story of how a small little Wiltshire town became one of the most weirdest places on the planet, a focus for UFO sightings and all kinds of things, to the point that a local paper actually put out a headline of prepare for alien invasion. There's this really brilliant story about people who belong to UFO groups and the rivalry between them. That's the story that I've been fascinated with since I was a kid, because I lived just down the road. So look out for it. It's just simply called Warminster.
This podcast is a Roy Field Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
Little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yet in the dark street shineth the everlasting light. The hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight. Bah!
Wow.
Wasn't she good?
It's fantastic. Is that Mia?
That was Mia Fox, folks. Very seasonal. But folks, you know what? Guess what?
This is Dumby Dum, the show about the reality ducky drama that are centred in Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the William Wilberforce, who is Royfield Brown, and with me I have our rabid abolitionist, who is...
Rosie Porty.
And this week's John Brown, folks, is...
Quentin Rayner.
And this week's Dumby Dum, as we said at the top of the show, is from R. Mia Fox. Now, as always, it's been a kerfuffle trying to get this thing up for you. We've gone from platform to platform, but we've decided we're going to kick Zencastr in the proper goonies from here on in, and we're doing this on Zoom. And you're saying, Royfield, why are you telling me this? Because it sounds exactly the same as normal, and that's because I is the king, the what of the edit. So you're listening to this and going, well, sounds like a dum-de-dum to me, but whew, we've had to really push knobs and pull out wires and all sorts to make this happen. But enough of me and us and our travails, Rosie. Somebody else would like to replicate, maybe even try and surpass what our Mia Fox has done by sending us in a dum-de-dum. How can that be done?
Well, it's going to be a tall order following that amazing singing. But if you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send a text starting with dum to 07786 200690.
We have had more platforms than King's Cross, but we're finally up and running, and we should say thanks to our social media supremos, Cosmo, for his podcast roundups, who always chivvies you, Royfield, if you don't actually give him the facility on Twitter. He's on your case straight away, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Got to say thanks to Mike Hatton for his character counts, and Shambridge for our wonderful voices, and of course, Lucy V. Freeman, the one and only.
Mm. On this week's episode, we only have two calls, but you know what? That's all good because it's Christmas. I know that you're there. Tummy's full of turkey, turkey sandwiches, Christmas pud, all of that. So you've had better things to do than to call in and do call.
But they've had so much to digest over Christmas on the arches there, Royfield. What's wrong with our dummies? They should be clamoring to get on.
They should, but you know what it is? They've been sated. They've been sated by not only a great week in Ambridge, but by all this bloody Christmas turkey. And the other thing is as well, when I woke up today, I wasn't actually aware it was Monday. Were you, Rosie?
Clearly.
It's a bank holiday. Well, I knew it was Monday.
Well, but it is that funny, weird period where every day is basically a Sunday. And I've got a sneaky feeling that's kind of tripped up our listeners because this happens every year, to be said. So, but anyway, two calls, occasional Tony and Witherspoon. But first is Amber's The Week That Was Ambridge.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. I'm Amber, and on this festive week in Ambridge, Oliver Sterling once again proves that money needn't mean snobbery and shows true kindness to our Tracy. David proves you're perfectly capable of snobbery without money, dry heaving over even having to breathe the same air as Mince Casey for half an hour. Mince proves to be philanthropist of the hour, telling David how he gifted his dad a classic car, raised a child who isn't biologically his, built an annex for his mother, and is currently working on saving orphans from burning buildings and solving world hunger. Kirsty throws Philip to the mercy of the police, as she Sherlocks her way through every single detail of the horses' slaves saga. And that was the week in Ambridge.
Thank you for that, Amber. As always, a concise roundup of our week. We don't exactly have a hot topic, but there is a hot topic. And why don't you read out our little missive from Leslie Greaves, Rosie, which was posted on Facebook?
I will, and it was very pertinent and to the point. So this is from Leslie Greaves. You presumably love your husband as you've only just married him. You find out he's done something criminal and despicable. Do you?
And we have four options for you. A, phone the police without a moment's thought. B, take a few hours to absorb the facts and the implications, then phone the police. C, have an almighty row and then try and find the horses and put it right without phoning the police, then leave your husband. D, stand by your man. Discuss.
Was that Tammy Wynette or was that Dolly Parton, Stand By Your Man?
That started off as Tammy and it drifted. I was trying to get to Dolly and I don't think I got anywhere near either of them. Because I was trying to decide which option I'd go for.
Tammy, Stand By Your Man.
Was right. It Tammy? You're right, actually.
Mm. Well, let's throw the question out to you, Rosie P. Obviously, within the construct of a 12-minute docudrama, we want resolution. And we've had 9 months build-up of this from when we knew that it was modern slavery. And arguably, actually, it's been 18 months of this whole thing. So we want resolution. And we've had some level of resolution. Obviously, there's going to be another layer of this, which is when the village finds out and they realise so many village projects have been compromised. On second listening, I did think it was resolved a little bit too fast. But I just thought Leslie phrasing thus, then actually I think the script writers have missed a trick. We could have had her sweat a little. But what do you reckon, Rosie P?
So this, I guess there's two sides. One, Kirsty's character definitely, you know, she definitely would just get on the phone to the police. Once she'd worked it out, I don't think she would sit on her laurels and think about it. I think she would go straight to A, in my view, because she's had about 24 hours to think about what sort of something wrong with Philip anyway, because he was in Telford with Victoria. And she's had 24 hours in between Gav leaving and him getting back. So she was already very suspicious about him. So she's already kind of, in a way, I think, mentally left him, because I think she thought he was having an affair. When she kind of unraveled what he'd been doing with, you know, Blake Kenzie and Jordan, I think it was very true to Kirsty for her to go straight to A.
Well, Leslie is putting it to us, isn't it? Rather than putting ourselves imagining what Kirsty should or shouldn't do. So she's saying, what would you do? Rose is right in terms of Kirsty. She's very impulsive and principled, and how she reacted is probably how we expected her to react. But I think if you put it out to other people, B and C are very tempting, aren't they? There's a lot in there. I think dramatically, C has more in it in terms of have an almighty row, then try and find the horses and put it right without phoning the police, then leave your husband. So if I was a script writer, be tempted by that, wouldn't you? Because there are so many options there that you could go for. I think most people would go for B or C, take a few hours to absorb the facts and the implications, then phone the police, since you just married your man and presumably you're still desperately in love. I think ultimately, obviously, it ends up with the police, but I think the route would perhaps not be quite so direct for most people.
I completely agree. I think it's B or C. And I think, as morally righteous as Kirsty is, I think even she'd go for B. Thinking about this, and I take your point completely, Rosie, that she knew something was wrong. She just didn't know what. But you're not expecting modern slavery. You're not. She was expecting, as she said at the start of that episode, well, you know, who were you with? What was her name? What was her name? And he says, well, I was at the travel lodge, you know, and she's like, who with? You're not expecting that. And that's going to knock everyone for six. An affair is going to knock you for six. But she was expecting him to say, well, actually, it was, you know, the accountant, whoever. It was a woman. And you're not expecting this. And she's completely on second listening, admittedly. She didn't have any time actually to process that, because you're not expecting that, are you? So I think, really, this is B.
The key word from Leslie's post is that, you know, would you take a few hours to absorb the implications? And I think in some ways, Kirsty hasn't done that. In fact, this was picked up on the Twitters by Dominic Young in particular. And he tweeted, oh, my God, did Kirsty say she did the books? She's going down. And of course, you know, that is an area where she's going to struggle to defend herself, because she will probably be accused of guilt by association.
But I mean, in terms of sort of Leslie's points, I mean, for me, I think in real life, it would probably be B if I wasn't physically frightened of the person. But if my husband was physically threatening me, then I would be on the phone to the police.
But how is he physically threatening her?
He wouldn't let her get to the front door.
Well, he was just desperately trying to come up with excuses, wasn't he?
No, he was physically restraining her.
Right, I miss that. Right.
Yeah, I must admit, I did too. Thinking about Kirsty doing the books, I don't remember that at all. Do we remember her actually saying, give your books to me? I know there's the issue around the laptop, but I don't remember that.
No, I don't either. And that came as a surprise. Like Dominic, I thought, yes, you're now actually vulnerable to any prosecution. Plus the fact, well, you must have known what was going on. You did the books and you still married him, this dreadful modern-day slaver. So, Kirsty, what have you got to say to that? So that's going to be a problem
for her. She needs a really good lawyer, ASAP.
Anna, bring her back.
Anna.
I loved her. She was great.
We do. And actually, they're on the Twitters as well. Messaging every now and then is our...
Oh, is she?
I
liked her. I thought she was a very good actor. I thought she brought a lot to the Archers.
Moving back to things in Ambridge last week, there's still more of a long tail of this, isn't there? Obviously, this has now come out. Kirsty has said what she said. Roy knows he's been collared by the old Bill. So what do you reckon this 70th anniversary episode is going to be all about? I'm guessing that it's some level of not a neat bow put around the whole storyline, but there's going to be some level of resolution and happiness, because there has to be, because the 70th episode. And I'm wondering if that wasn't the reason for Eddie to say to Clary, let's renew our vows. Are they going to renew their vows on the 70th episode? But then there will be some level of denouement with this slavery storyline, some level. It cannot be all over by January the 1st. Discuss.
Well, I mean, Clary and Eddie's, that was very poignant, hearing Eddie declaring his love for Clarice down on one knee, and it was super sweet. I'm not sure Eddie's going to be able to organise a renewal service in a week's time. I've got a feeling that they're going to try and get Peggy Woolley and Jill Archer around some kind of socially distanced log fire, because they were both mentioned during the An Ambridge at Christmas evening. So I'm expecting something heartwarming to do with sort of some of the older characters. And I can't quite work out whether Philip is going to pin all the blame on Gav when he's being interviewed by, you know, the police, or whether he's going to fess up to it all. I just can't see him admitting to all of his sins to the police. It doesn't really ring true in terms of his character.
Yes, there was quite a lot of chat about that, wasn't there? That we haven't heard the last of this. He went too easily, didn't he, into the police car. He's already indicated, hasn't he, that he's started to blame Gav already for not feeding the horses, as he said. Who knows whether he's going to start using this book excuse to throw the book at Krusty as well. The actor, hasn't he got a part in Coronation Street as well? That might speed things up, mightn't it?
I think that's Gavin.
Gavin.
Oh, is it Gavin? Yeah. I thought Philip. Right. Well, that might speed up the justice process for Gavin anyway. When is the actual 70th episode? Is it the 1st itself?
Yeah, should be January the 1st.
Wonderful.
Mm. I think you're right, Rosie. Peggy has to play a significant part in that episode, because she's the only actor who's been in it for all of the 70 years, though she wasn't Peggy Archer then. So she played another character. I think she only became Peggy Archer about 3 or 4 years in. But anyway, but she's the only actor who's been with it all the way through its duration.
I think friendship is surprising, or fresh friendships could well start to be nurtured as well. I think we're going to see an unusual friendship develop between David and Vince. That went much better than we expected. So I think that's going to be interesting.
Quentin, is that relationship more unusual than Elizabeth and Vince? That feels like fish walking with fowl from my perspective.
Vince and Lizzie.
Yeah, that's David and Vince makes much more sense, because at least they have business dealings. But Elizabeth and Vince, on the face of it, is still more peculiar.
It's the old opposites, isn't it, argument. I think that was actually mentioned. But I did enjoy the surprise from David at how much he enjoyed Vince's company. And I thought that was nicely played, actually, between the two of them. I thought that was very good. Particularly enjoyed that little moment when Vince said, right, no shop talk. You could sense the slight flash of panic in David, thinking, well, what the hell are we going to talk about now? But actually, I thought it was nicely handled, and I really warmed to Vince during that, especially what he was saying about how much we owe our mothers and that sort of thing. I thought that was nice, and him keeping in touch with stepsons and so forth. I kept thinking, is he just saying this to make a good impression?
I thought it was very authentic. And I mean, and you know, and you aren't giving him his right name. It's Mince, not Vince.
Mince, of course, yeah. Mince.
Mince Casey.
Yeah.
What I loved about it was just the kind of this kind of unraveling of David's, you know, perceptions of Mince. Because, you know, the Rolls Royce that he'd bought for his dad, but his dad never actually drove the Rolls. How caring Mince is towards his stepson. And yes, the fact that he's taken an interest in Freddie and Lily. And what I can't wait for is the Mince Truss meetup, because it was hilarious when our Tracy met Truss over Sunday lunch and roasted him. And I can't see Mince Casey being able to take Truss particularly seriously. And he does seem to have Lizzie's interests at heart. And effectively, Truss is the biggest scrounger. He still owes Lizzie $5,000 from the bailiffs from way back then. He's living in Lower Loxley rent-free, using his 19 temperature kettle, using up all their electricity on that, and then wasting his time in the kind of the art zone or whatever he's calling it. So I just can't wait for sort of like a New Year's festive celebration with Truss and Mince getting together. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, isn't it? I'm missing Russ because I can't stand him, and that's why I'm missing him. But back on the not unlikely friendships, but new friendships, the truce between Tracy and Jazza was lovely as well, and that has definitely opened the floodgates for Trazza. We all want Trazza to happen. It would be a lovely hookup, and
I think JC's better than Trazza.
No. You see, I was going to say there's a truce between Tracy and Jazza now, but I'm afraid what's happened is that it has there's no truce on this issue between two other Dumpty Dummers. I'm talking Peter Fickley and Kerry Warbus. I'm with Kerry on this. It's Trazza. Peter is a JC man. He wants JC as the mashup name, and this has caused problems on Twitter. If I can just read out the depth of their friendship on this. So Peter says, he says it's JC. Kerry replies, Peter is a one-man band on this score. Bless. Relentlessly banging that sorry little drum and clashing his besymbled knees together in the hope that he'll achieve fame and success. And yet his cap on the pavement remains empty. In reply, Peter Fickling says, Christ, here comes Twitter's foghorn. Blop. Another brash, loud opinion from a brash, loud lady. It's very tiring. And Kerry replies, prepare for many hours, days, weeks, months, and years of tiredness, my lovely. So there you go. They're getting on fine about this on the Trazza Jazzy argument. So watch this space.
But you never know.
When they're next on, it's going to be fun.
But you never know.
Where do you stand? Trazza or Jazz or JC?
Me? Well, I'm somewhat agnostic on the whole thing, right? But I was kind of thinking after that Monday episode with Oliver finding Tracy at the bar at Grey Gables looking a little bit forlorn because Roman's gone, that maybe we're going to have May to December or whatever the heck the expression is, you know, the slightly older silver fox type of gentleman having a relationship with a slightly younger, newer model of a lady type person.
I think that would be lovely. I think they get on so well. And I really love those scenes between the two of them. And Oliver's such a genuine gentleman, isn't he? And he says you're a very valued, you know, very dear friend now. And if it did go one step further, it would be completely believable. And I've really enjoyed that, though, those scenes. It was sweet that, you know, that he made sure she had the lunch that she wanted. And he's so charming with her, genuinely. And actually, I watched over
Quentin, I think, you know, one of your future careers should be an audio narrator of Mills and Boons, because the way that you narrative arc almost had me in tears.
But Rosie, here's a question, because I think you're the youngest of the trio here. Have you ever been tempted by an older silver fox?
In real life?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Really? Pray tell.
Yeah. A suave older gentleman did indeed sweep me off my feet at a black tie event.
Ooh.
On Park Lane many years ago. And we had a few candlelit suppers, a few cocktails in Mayfair, and then we waved our goodbyes to one another genteelly.
In the morning?
After several dates.
Oh, okay.
Revealed.
Smashing. Okay. You know the silver fox who I pictured you with? Quentin.
Oh, Rosie, our secret's out.
But listen, whilst the pair of you have been outed as lovers from way back, why don't we go and listen to what the caller inners have thought about last week's going on in Ambridge.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, we have our resident sports therapist, it's Witherspoon.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings and happy holidays to everyone in Dumpty Dum Towers and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. What a memorable Christmas Eve episode it was. I was so impressed with Kirsty, so firm and strong, in taking care of Philip in 13 short minutes of airtime. We had all speculated who would uncover his crimes. Would it be Joy or Harrison or Roy? No, it was Kirsty herself, my new favorite character. She's grown so much since her memorable scream of agony at the altar. Since then, she supported her friend Helen and confronted Helen's abuser on the stand. And now she's held her ground against the pleas of her new husband, whom she was able to recognize as a modern slaver. A weaker person might have felt sympathy for him and caved in. It also wasn't her fault that Philip had been such a good liar until he let slip the term horses. I also loved how Kirsty expressed empathy for Blake, Jordan, and Kenzie, and confronted Philip on both the criminality and immorality of his actions. And a tip of the cap to Roy for being in the right place at the right time. As for Philip himself, we saw how he rationalized his behavior as reasonable and circumstantial, but deep down he knew it was wrong. And finally, the great moment when we realized that the man who loved Christmas would be spending it in jail. The holiday will never be the same for Philip again. Kirsty is going to need a lot of support going forward. And people will be talking. I think they'll be empathetic, all except Susan, that is. But at least we can all breathe a little easier. Talk to you soon.
Well, I think Witherspoon has sort of covered the gamut of emotions really associated with the denouement. And definitely props to Roy for being there at the right time and standing firm and not letting Kirsty be on her own with Philip, because he was being very frightening towards her. And when I was listening to it, I had my kind of virtual pepper spray ready to go because I was actually quite frightened for her. So I think that it was fantastic that Roy was there. And again, you know, Witherspoon is, you know, articulating how, you know, well Kirsty was able to understand what was happening and show empathy for Blake, Kenzie and Jordan, but also that she recognised the criminality involved with it as well. And I think what's going to be very difficult for Ambridge is reconciling the fact that, you know, the majority of people in the village, including at the very beginning, Shula, Saint Shula was the first person to hire Philip and the young lads to fix the stable roof. I believe, because something went, there was some sort of storm or something to do with the hunt, but she brought Philip into the village to sort of do those fixes. And so she was the first person to kind of open her arms to him. And from there forth, people in that village have been giving him money and they've been effectively using slave labor. So I think it's going to be a pretty brutal new year for the residents of Ambridge when they realize exactly what's been going on.
The theme we keep returning to on this is the presence of Roy in all this, that there he was, Roy to the rescue. Her good old solid friend was there to protect her and call the police and check up on her. I keep thinking, you know, one day those two are going to get together properly, aren't they? I mean, he might not be the most interesting, exciting person, but he's Mr. Solid, he's Mr. Dependable, he's Mr. Loyal. And I think deep down, he loves Kirsty. I always sense that there's something there. As I said to you before, new friendships, new relationships developing. Who knows? Maybe she'll get somebody solid who's and some happiness. She won't have the most exciting life, but she'll have somebody who genuinely loves her and she can depend on and won't do the dirty on her. So maybe that's what is being teed up. It'd be nice, I think. Interesting that Witherspoon says that Kirsty has now become his new favourite character was. Because I think we felt we've lost Kirsty over the past couple of years. And it was good to hear her getting back to her old ways.
I think what's interesting there, sorry, Quentin, is that sense of losing Kirsty was because he was controlling her, brainwashed her into thinking that, you know, she had a perfect life. And I think one of the scales falling from her eyes was the whole, you know, job with the Wildlife Trust, where he'd said to her, oh, well, take a pay cut. I can manage the money. And I think, you know, and I know there's been some, Kirsty has lost her session in this estate by, you know, giving up paid work, by effectively being at home to kind of, you know, dig potatoes up and make Philip's lamb dinner. She just didn't have any of her campaigning zeal.
No, she lost
other than
that.
Her doing a litter pick.
I know, but what didn't ring true is that she identified all this with Rob. And yet, if to go along with what you're saying, she didn't recognize some of the same signs with her relationship with Philip. And she went from somebody with very sharp antennae to somebody who seemed to lose all sense of right and wrong or being hoodwinked. That's what we lost. And it happened too quickly, in my opinion, that she didn't sense he was a bit of a wrong and it was all too good to be true sooner. But maybe it's because she was after Tom, she was desperate for somebody or something, some relationship, and she just fell for
it. Miscarriage, hadn't she, Quentin?
Yes.
So she lost her baby. I think she felt very, and actually going through the trauma of walking in on your best friend, you know, covered in blood and custard and tuna bake, that's hugely traumatic, I imagine. So I think in Kirsty's sort of defense, I suppose, you know, she was incredibly vulnerable, thought that, you know, she was going to have a child and that didn't happen. So she was all alone. And this man comes along with Shula's endorsement. So I effectively am going to blame Saint Shula for this.
Poor Shula.
So it's Saint Shula's fault that this modern slavery storyline has happened because she fancied Philip and she recommended him for that job. And it's all her fault.
Oh, give the woman a break. I think that's a little unfair on Shula. I know how much you do like her. Not. what about the playground? Of course, he did the playground, didn't he? For nothing, didn't he? To ingratiate himself. So do they dig that up in disgust? Yeah, you're right. They're knock-on effects for the village, aren't they? Isn't there? Because his imprimatur is all over the place. His Philip and his modern-day slaves. We haven't heard the end of Philip, I don't think. Unfortunately, I think this is going to drag on a bit because he will start blaming others, especially when he finds out that Gavin, as good as gave Kirsty the nod to start asking some questions and open her eyes and all that, it's going to turn nasty, I think. Despite all these lovely new friendships that I predict are going to happen and relationships, it'll be soured by the nasty Philip.
Mm. Just interestingly, though, you said that Roy was wonderful because he was solid and dependable and actually dull and boring, but that was good. These are all the reasons why you dislike David Archer, just saying.
Me?
Yes, you in particular.
Well, interesting. I was thinking about this. I don't think I've ever said I dislike David. In fact, I was, before we came on air, I was thinking about, what do I really think about David Archer? I was thinking of the context of him and Vince. And I don't dislike David. I know some people viscerally dislike him. I think he's all right, David. I mean, God, he's dull. Yes, of course he is. And Freddie was worried about the dull way in that he read his poem. But I quite like David. He's what he is. He does the right thing on the whole. And he had a good laugh at his own expense with Vince being his new BFF and all that. And that was a nice scene with him and Ruth, I thought. I don't viscerally dislike David. I don't. I think he's all right. I do find him extremely dull at times and boring and a killjoy and all that. But, I mean, that's in a way why I quite warm to him, because at least you know what you're going to get from him. Those are my genuine feelings about David. Roy's a slight chip off the block, but I think I like Roy. I think Roy's a nice chap, isn't he? He's always there.
What about Lexi?
Because Lexi for Roy, yes.
Yeah, because she should come back because, in terms of the denouement, in terms of, the 70th anniversary, Alice's baby, the alcoholism, that hasn't gone away. And that family is going to be ripped apart when it all becomes apparent that there is a significant problem with Alice. And how is Adam going to cope? And will Debbie have to come back? There's a whole kind of stream around that has kind of been paused.
Isn't it extraordinary that pause? I know one's almost forgotten the Alice storyline and all the drama in that because of what's happened this week. But you're right. We've all got that story up in the background, haven't we? Good point. Do I care what Adam thinks?
I'm sensing no.
God, I'm missing him. I really am. He will reemerge, won't he, eventually?
Because I think Roy and Lexi truly were in love. That came across. Yes. And I honestly think that Lexi needs to come back. And also, she was really good friends with Kirsty as well. So, I really don't think we need to join Kirsty and Roy together in order for Kirsty to have support. I mean, if Lexi, hears about what's going on, then I think she'd be straight back across. Once COVID restrictions have been relaxed and the vaccine's there, I think we'll get Lexi back.
But do you think Roy's now going to become all very protective towards Kirsty and they're going to fall in love?
No.
All right. Okay.
They're not going to fall in love because Kirsty needs a break from disastrous relationships and she needs to, hopefully not end up as Helen's au pair when Helen buys Beechwood at a police auction for 50p and homeless Kirsty ends up being Cinderella. I'm hoping that doesn't happen and that Kirsty can spend some time and well, hopefully she's not going to be put in prison because of misleading the Inland Revenue. I think we kind of need Cosmo to understand what the implications are because Kirsty may have,
Or Glyn Fullerlove, he's a tax expert.
He's a tax expert.
Up before the House of Lords last week, wasn't he?
He was. We also need some family law expert as well because can she annul the marriage? Well, I know you had this debate with Philippa the other week.
Yeah, well, that's Miss Mid-City. Which reminds me, actually, nicely queued up there, Quentin, even though I know it was not deliberate on your part. Folks, I've just got to say, big ups to everybody who's been creating their profiles on dumdydum.com because Tractor is up and running and is a kicking. I can tell you, if you're in the Derby area, post-COVID, you could actually don't have to wait till the COVIDs are over. You can go and message Mid-City via the website and just say, hello, I maybe live 5 miles down the road. When the government says we can go back to normal, whenever that might be, maybe we can meet up, have a coffee and talk about the Archers. But you don't have to just do that with Miss Mid-City over there in Derby. You can do it with about 1,000 dum-dum-dummers who are scattered all throughout the globe. So if you go on dum-dum-dum.com, look on the menu there. The Tractor link is there. There are pins aplenty. And one of the lovely things is we can see where all the clusters are. So post-COVID, post the coronas, Rosie Porty is a shed load of dum-dum-dummers in and around Edinburgh, Musselburgh.
Exciting.
Even in Sydney, Australia, there's about 5. So you've got no excuses, folks. Tractor is there. It's a great way for you to commune with your fellow dum-dum-dummers and Archers fans. What you do is you sign up, create a profile. There's a big link. It says register top right on the menu. Hit that. Then you create a profile. You put your address and the best way to do this, we don't need your house number, very obviously. It's not a stalker's charter. But what you need to do is if you're in a big city, put the area. So if it was me, I'll go Perry Bar, Birmingham, England. And then it puts the pin in Perry Bar. And then you'll know if there's any other dum-dum-dummers in the city of Birmingham close by, etc., etc. It's Jessie has been working furiously all over Christmas to get it up, and boy, oh boy, doesn't it half look spectacular? We even have a Dumby Dumb in Alaska, Azerbaijan, you know, it's wonderful places like that. Quentin Rayner, I see that you haven't pinned yourself.
I haven't really looked into it, but you sold it to me so well. I just realised that Miss City is a fellow East Midlander, because I'm in Nottinghamshire, she's in Derby. And did you say, so she's a family lawyer, is she, Miss City?
She is.
So we need to hear from her next week as a caller in her to tell us on what grounds could Kirsty annul this marriage to Phil, having only been married for about a week. So that would be very interesting to hear from her. So I put this call and challenge out to you, Miss City, to put us right on this legal point. It'd be very interesting.
That's a good shout. Talking about good shouts. Now, this isn't all 110% sorted, folks, but it's going to go something like this. Ian Pepper, who plays at Roy Tucker, has given us a signed 70th anniversary Archers script to auction, to raffle away for a charity. So you're going to get a very small little missive from me in the next 2 or 3 days when I completely work all this out, exactly how we're going to do this. But you'll be able to win the 70th Archers anniversary script signed by Roy Tucker. And what we're going to do is we're going to go on to Just Giving and we're going to donate the proceeds to an anti-slavery charity. But all the details will come to you in a day or two. Hopefully, we can raise a goodly little sum of money so that the evil Philip Mosses of the world really do get the comeuppance, and that people who have been trafficked and have been, dare I say, got the wrong end of the stick in terms of what life has to offer and have found themselves being exploited and abused can get a little bit of support. So bear with us. Bear with me. The next couple of days, I'm going to put together a nice little trailer. I'm going to put it up on the feed when I have everything all sorted, and let's try and raise some money, because we have to be said that one of the great things that the BBC have done is to highlight how prevalent this evil practice actually is. And as I've said a couple of times on the podcast, I wasn't aware at the start of this storyline how prevalent it actually is. So if we can give any bit of help and succor to people specifically this time of the year who are suffering at the hands of that evil trade, let's do that via the charity. So it's really great that Ian has given us a script for us to auction away. Now, it's Occasional Tony who's decided to call in.
Hello, it's Occasional Tony phoning in just occasionally. Having heard the Archers since the beginning, I've always seen it as a steady stream of consciousness, a sort of parallel make-believe family. Because I was young when I started, my sense of disbelief was always suspended. In the last couple of decades, that suspension has declined and finally died. I have been most careful not to share my Archers with anyone and tried never to see pictures of the actors. In my world, the Archers are real. Now, since hearing D2D, I know it is all scripted and plotted and planned and polished, and there are actors. The Archers may be a soap or a docudrama, but it still holds my attentions, albeit only now once a week instead of twice a day. I feel those scriptwriters, to which you refer so often, need to understand the difference between drama and tragedy. The Alice alcohol pregnancy storyline is definitely into the latter. There is no real hope of a solution. It would take a lot more than a touch of Ambridge magic or the job fairy to put it all right. Tragedy can be the subject of a 2 or 3 hour play like Romeo and Juliet or Othello, but not a 12-minute slot squeezed between the news and some arts review programme. No, that's my downer. Anyway, I just hope the Archers carry on. The next 70 years, I'm sure, will be better than this 70 years, and I hope it will be as good as it when it first started.
Well, great to hear from Occasional Tony there, with an up and a down in that, really, wasn't it? His up was that he thinks the next 70 years will be even better than the previous, which is quite a challenge when you consider how good it's been up to now. Interesting distinction he makes between drama and tragedy. And I'd never actually made that distinction. I mean, the Alice storyline I see is really powerful drama. I've always seen it like that. He seems to be making the distinction, didn't he, that tragedy needs longer to be explained and dramatized rather than cramming it into a 12 or 13 minute slot. I don't entirely agree with him on that. I think I take his point that it's such a huge subject and broad ranging, and is going to take a long time to resolve, not in a neat docudrama. I think it has provided very powerful drama. I think they need to pace it very carefully. I think we all get very irritated, don't we, when difficult moments in life in The Archers are dusted up very quickly, like Liz's depression and so forth. It's all sort of sorted after about two or three counselling sessions. And I think it's very important, if they really do want to shed light on alcoholism and so forth, that they pace it enough and make it plausible, whatever solution they come up with. But I grant you that equally they can't eke it out for so long that people are just tearing their hair out, a bit like the modern day slavery, and saying, for goodness sake, make it end, you know, like Brexit. So they have got themselves into a difficult, dramatic position with Alice. Be interesting to see how they resolve it.
If this is the 70th anniversary we're building up to, three act tragedies, or indeed Greek tragedy, where the sins of the mother or father are passed on through generation to generation, and eventually retribution has to be had. Peggy's husband was an alcoholic, and her daughter has married a heavy drinker. And Alice has been a heavy drinker for many, many years. And I think Peggy, when she had that chat with Alice about Bath and was being very Poirot or Miss Marple about it all, you know, she very quickly cottoned on to the fact that Alice had not been on a mini break. And in terms of how all of these things knit back together, you can have tragedies that go through generations, and eventually some dark consequences happen. Just thinking back to my A-level classics and some quite gruesome events that happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. So I do think that in a long-running docudrama or radio soap opera, there is the ability to weave in these long-term narrative impacts of damaging behavior. So I think for me, there is those linkages back to the past, to history, to learned behavior that we're now kind of seeing come to fruition in a really horrible way with Alice. And I can't see a good outcome for Alice and Chris on New Year's Day.
No, no. I can't see a good outcome compressed, can you, for dramatic convenience?
I think that you've kind of nailed it in Rosie, in terms of what the Archers can do is spread out, give the alcohol storyline a real long tail and make it just live out in real time. Just like we've been aware for the last 3 years that Alice has a drinking problem. We didn't realise it was so acute, but we did realise that. That played out in real time. Let's say that this child is born, and I don't know whether they're going to make it or not. So I'm going to put that to one side. But a child, we believe right here and now, a child is going to be born. There's going to be a casual storyline, let's say, in 18 months post that child has been born. They're at the playground and Alice's child is not doing something which maybe another child who's round about the same age is. And without explicitly mentioning anything, we think, are there being educationally or learning? Are there some kind of learning difficulties, etc.? There's going to be lots of instances like that which can play out. And that's irregardless of whether Alice then says that she's stone cold sober and she's been able to deal with alcohol. Obviously, we know that it's a constant battle, but let's just say she's dealt with her issue of not physically drinking day in, day out. So it can actually play out. And in lots of ways, the Archers is the perfect forum for a storyline like that, because that child will grow up and we can see their development delayed or not, then play out. And it doesn't have to be the East End dum 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 when we hear that this child has maybe fallen behind at school or not or whatever.
how long do you think they can play it out without people just going, for goodness sake, I can't take any more of this?
But this is the thing, they don't have to explicitly couch it in terms of, well, of course, his child has alcoholic fetal syndrome. They don't have to. We will know. The theme music afterwards, when it's a case of this child is, let's say, 15 months old and is not walking. So I'll put that but to
the
one
way,
side.
The way around it is that the child, thankfully, is unaffected. You know, there might be a way of shortcutting it, mightn't it?
Mm. The other thing, and it isn't quite what Tony was saying, as I believe, but it goes back to the point which I made very briefly kind of at the start of the show. I quite enjoyed the episode where Kirsty, within 12 minutes, and of which out of that 12 minutes, half of it was devoted to the Grundys, basically said to Phil, what's going on? She discovers what's going on and says, I'm calling the police. But I do believe that considering we've had all this time, all this builds up, and will she find out? How will she find out? Will it be Joy that realises what's going on? Will Harrison Burns swing to the rescue? That we could have had a really good couple of episodes whereby it was all them, with her just saying, I don't believe this, Philip. I can't believe this. With her crying, showing some emotional vulnerability, because she has just got married.
Mm.
She has just got married. And what Leslie wrote on Facebook really made me think. We all believe that when it came out, Kirsty will do the right thing. But for us to have maybe two episodes and then to have a little bit of a cliffhanger where we think, with Philip apparently winning her round with his lies, and her going, oh, Philip, I just don't know. And then da 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 da, and then it continued the next one. And then that being the Christmas Eve episode where they're going, no, just call the police. And what the script writers have proven to us over and over is not only can they set up great scenarios, but when needs be, they can really pack a punch with having a really compressed episode where two people are talking. We didn't get that on Christmas Eve. What we had was an event on Christmas Eve because it was Christmas Eve. But we didn't have a powerful seesaw of viewpoints, of which we all know ultimately the man's a slaver, he has to go down. But as Leslie Greaves said, they've just got married. That's going to throw everyone a little bit of a wobble and a curveball, considering you're not expecting your new partner to say, oh yeah, I'm a modern day slaver.
So were you convinced by Kirsty's reaction? Do you think she was too impulsive?
On first listen, I was actually quite satisfied with the episode. On second listen, I went, no, it's too neat. And it wasn't even all them for the 12 minutes. I just believe there was much more that we could have gone into. As somebody who's gone through the end of a marriage, it wasn't a case of my partner walking in, my ex-partner walking in and everything being resolved in 6 minutes. I said, okay, it's all over. When you decide that it's over, that still is not a 6 minute, 12 minute conversation. And she's just married. So as far as we're concerned, the listeners, she hasn't had a long unraveling of the relationship a la Helen and Rob, where, you know, they weren't getting on for months. They literally, at the summit, they've just got married. You're not just going to switch off and just go, I'm walking out the door within 12 minutes. Impossible. I don't care if you're Kirsty or not. You're still going to go, but how could you do this, Phil? Please explain this to me. And then he's going to come out with some bullshit and it'll make her wobble in the moment. That's just human. That's just being a human being.
But he was physically threatening her. So what I don't think either of you have picked up on is that when he was speaking to her, like, he was becoming, you know, he wouldn't let her get to the door. You know, he was refusing to let her leave the house. So if you're being physically intimidated by your brand new elderly pensioner slave owning husband, you're quite rightly going to call the police.
You see, there was this slight ambiguity in it because you could be forgiven for thinking she was calling the police because she was disgusted by what she just realized, that she'd married a modern day slaver and she wanted to dob him in. or that she was actually frightened for her own safety, and that's why she wanted the police called. Now, that's interesting because I think she actually wanted the police for both reasons.
Had a lot of righteous anger in her voice, but she was also frightened. And I'll mention again, walk in on the sort of partially, you know, dead body of her best friend's husband. So she's got immediate trauma that would come back into her memory. So she was righteously angry with him.
Yeah.
But I don't think she sort of got Roy to phone the police to say, oh, and by the way, there's a modern slavery issue. I think she was frightened. And I think the next step would be to say, and you need to find the boys, because they're in either in a shallow grave in Telford or they're in a little motel somewhere.
At what point, though, do you think she starts to think, blimey, what are the implications for me?
I think it'll take her a while, because I don't think she will be able to kind of put it into her own mind that she, basically her actions by doing the books and the rest of it directly implicate her. I think she will be quite naive about that. I don't think she will understand how the sort of prosecution process will look at her role. But now they're married, that's the thing.
Yes.
She should never have married him.
We were all screaming that, weren't we? Of course. If only she looked at the tweet along, she would have avoided all this.
She would.
I'll tell you the one thing which I'm really warming up to in The Archers is new Freddie. You know, Freddie finding his feet, Freddie becoming a fully formed grown-up. And very obviously, the Christmas show was a vehicle for that, wasn't it? What do we think about Freddie and Lily and them basically taking over the reins slowly but surely at Lower Loxley? What do you reckon, Rosie P?
I think that Lily, for some reason, is holding back. And I'm not sure if he's holding back because she truly loves her brother and wants him to succeed in the Christmas show and for the folk who are kind of going to be in charge of releasing the estate to him are going to do that, or whether she wants him to fall flat on his face, lose the estate, she takes over, and it's Truss and Lily in charge of Lower Loxley, and Elizabeth gets banished to a dower house. I can't call it at the minute, because Lily has such bad judgment. She moved to Manchester with a middle-aged art teacher who then whacked away $5,000 on some paints from Hobbycraft. She's not the kind of, you know.
And a kettle.
So she has bad judgment. So, but she's only young. I mean, I think the key thing for me is that they're only 21, the pair of them. And it seems completely balmy that one of them, either Freddie or Lily, is going to be given the reins of Lower Loxley. And Elizabeth is just kind of like, la, 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 this is all fine. But it's his friendship with Linda is transforming him. And also, I think Officer Banks from the prison, who we heard about during the rehearsals, I think he is becoming an improved young man. I think he does have strength of character. But I just think it's completely bonkers that you would have a 21-year-old being handed the reins of Lower Loxley. Maybe I just haven't spent enough time in stately homes, unlike my good friend Quentin, who I'm sure knows many a chatelaine and can advise us on these matters.
Well, before I answer that, I was just going to move to another wing of my stately home.
can we time how long it's going to take you to walk there, Quentin?
Because the huge range fire has just gone out and my manservant has disappeared. Freddie used to drive me nuts. I couldn't bear him. I was like, oh, God, get off. And that has changed. I think you're right. I think the whole Linda dynamic has changed him. He's also a changed young man, having been in prison. I'd love it when he takes the piss out of Russ. I think those are some of the funniest scenes, because he is ruthless. And he says everything that I feel about Russ. So he has gone up hugely in my estimation as a result of that. It's interesting that there's a strength of character in Officer Banks, was it, I think you mentioned? He applied one of his techniques, didn't he, to get the cast going. And Lily was genuinely impressed by that he was cracking the whip and being very decisive and assertive. He is becoming a man in that sense. We're seeing him develop. And he is less irritating, more appealing. And I thought it was nice, that scene between him and Eddie, where he had to eat humble pie and beg Eddie to come onto the show, although it didn't take much persuasion, did it? He handled that nicely, and I thought that was nice, the way Eddie realised he was in a pickle and immediately helped him out. And I thought that was part of the feel-good Christmas week as well. There was a lot of that. There was a lot of cozy, life-affirming stuff going on last week, wasn't there, which was nice. Mm. And he's learning how to handle people better, not rub them up so much, and realize his limitations. So I have done 180 degrees on Freddie. I'm beginning to like him quite a lot, actually.
Mm. Just moving on very slightly from Freddie, because I agree with you, Quentin. I've done a 180. I found him incredibly annoying, but I think that seeing him unfurl his wings as a proper fully fledged adult now, and it's been lovely to watch as much as you can do on a radio drama.
Well, I thought that was one of the lovely feel-good factors of the weekend. I was trying to think, when was the last time we heard from Clary?
Good
shout. I mean, months, isn't it?
Could even be a year. I don't think we've heard from him meaningfully all year. You know, I can't think.
She didn't have a monologue, did she? Did she have a monologue?
No, but we heard from her just after William almost went postal with the gun. So right. that was in kind of February, wasn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. It's almost a year. Yeah, almost a year.
Almost a year.
Well, I thought that was a neat trick to bring her back over Christmas, because it suddenly felt like a Christmas the Archers, didn't it, with Clary?
It did.
She's got
it
a lovely voice.
Right, I tell you who else has got a lovely voice. It's our Sue Lee.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, lovely people. It's Siri here, Queen Otter on the Twitters, for another social media roundup. A bit of administrative news to start off with. Get yourselves up on the Tractor map. I'm sure that Royfield will have mentioned it once or twice. So we can see where everybody is. We're up to 936 members at the time of recording, with a lot of people joining over Christmas, which is lovely. It's been a super story this week. Lots of exciting things going on, but also some optional extras. So with great pleasure included Eddie's reminiscencing of Joe. Louise pointed out it doesn't appear in BBC Sounds when you type in Archers. I've always found the search engine to be particularly useless, like Leslie. Emma posted a link to all the special content on the Beebs Archers website. So if you're not sure what's going on and when, have a look there. Have a look for her post or go onto the Archers site. Thanks to Witherspoon and Archers Academic Christmas Day podcast. It was lovely. lots of people were thankful for it, including Pat, who also posted about the real nitty-gritty this week, the evilness of Gavin and Philip. There are lots of us who think that Gavin is under the control of Philip, but he's still evil, let's face it. And he wanted 30k for that wedding out in Bali from the proceeds of slavery, as Catherine pointed out, and he's culpable for the Gay Grable's explosion by locking Blake, Kenzie and Jordan with no food in for the weekend. Well, he'll have plenty of time to mull that over in prison, says Nick. Fiona says he's up to his neck in it. He could have walked away, but he was too busy enjoying his comfortable life and has now beat a hasty retreat. But Pat points out that every interaction between Philip and Gavin involved Philip berating his son, telling him how useless he was, and making elaborate lies to our Kirsty. Witherspoon reckons Gavin is going to jail, but he has a chance of rehabilitation and doing good works after jail, but definitely not Philip. And Richard gave us a great new simile to refer back to Gavin, that he's not the first puppy out of the basket. Long discussions about whether we are being manipulated to sympathise with the two of them, and a real hope that Victoria is an undercover cop. Oh, that would be so lovely. Josh says we're uneasy because we know we'd have been taken in like Kirsty. Our Kirsty. How are the residents of Ambridge going to react? Will they feel complicit? Asked Charlotte. Will they realise that accepting a rock bottom quote was feeding Philip's way of doing business? This will make people question, both residents and listeners, our choices. The scriptwriters do some of this stuff really well. I worry personally for Joy and Kirsty. I hope both of them, Philip and Gavin that is, are going down for a long time because of what's been done to our Kirsty. Sandra did say, she admitted, that she was in Marks and Spencer's and said, poor Kirsty, out loud, but it doesn't seem to have got back. She seems to have gotten away with it. Lillian, bless her heart, shared her choir's rendition of O Holy Night, which is up on YouTube. A real calming treat with home videos of people having a lovely time. It reminded me of how Christmas was just last year. 4 minutes of joy. If you haven't listened to it, give it a whirl. Marion pointed us to a BBC report on a creepy drive-through grotto. Sounds very much like a cross of Lower Loxley's Halloween with the Grundy's World of Christmas. People do this stuff every year and they carry on getting away with it. And I'm going to round up dire predictions of a possible demise for Oliver, but with the hope that he could leave Grange Farm to the Grundys and Grey Gables to Tracy and Kathy could reappear. Kathy, you're on mute, love. Just bottom right. Press the button on the bottom right. And thanks finally to Glyn for an excellent set of pig and sheep photos. And as he says, stay safe and stay dum-de-dumming. Bless you all and a happy new year.
Thank you for that, Sue, and I hope you had a Merry Christmas, my dear. Quentin,
yes.
Big boots to fill this week because, you know, Pete Fickle has been knocking it out at the park regarding, you know, tweets of the week. Yeah, that I'm somewhat exaggerating. I think the last tweets of the week were somewhat of a debacle. But anyway, so the bar is very low. You can easily vault over this. Prove me right. Prove me right, sir.
Yes, I shall try and fill Fickling's feet, shall we say. But I have picked out three tweets. Fortunately, despite us having very few caller-owners this week, the tweet-along was relatively busy. They obviously had quite a lot to get their teeth into. So I have picked out three, and I know we always do it reverse order. Bronze place this for tweet of the week. Mm-hmm. I have awarded it to Gay Grey Bell, and they are at Grey Gay Bell 21. And they write, we've had slashes and curly poos in recent weeks in the Archers. Who says we're not down with a contemporary lingo? And of course, she's referring to Vince's going off for a slash and the curly poo emoji that Tracy mentioned, I think. So slashes and curly poos on the Archers. Who'd have thought? Eh? You wouldn't have heard that 70 years ago, would you, occasional Tony? In silver position, and she's one of my favourite tweeters, is Miranda, otherwise known as at Apple Android app. And we were just been talking about Clary, and she says, 40 years for Clary? Did she deserve this length of sentence? Which a lot of people will have sympathy for. That then leads to the final podium position, which is, of course, the gold position. I presume we're going to have a nice instrumental bed underneath this at some stage. Sorry, Roy, will we have the instrumental bed, Royfield? Can you cut that in or not?
It's there now. It's right now. It's in the edit, Quentin.
I can't hear it. Right. Okay. Right. I'll do that. I'll do the gold thing again. Sorry. Okay.
Oh, no. I think that just go for that. It's quite funny you actually saying, Royfield, is there the bed, when there is actually the bed of music?
All right. So that only leaves, obviously, this final position, the gold position, the gold standard of tweeting this week, goes to sweary, caps locky Archers listener known on the Twitters as at Archers Caps Lock. And they sum up, I think, the sentiments of the week. And it is this: oh, Kirsty, thank God she's back. And I completely concur.
Yay, she's back.
Kirsty's back. Behind bars, but she's back.
HMP Borchester.
Yes. Folks, dumdydum.com. Go there. And if you do nothing else, go there and sign up. Become a member of said self website. And then you'll be able, through the website, to message other dumdydummers and kind of talk to them. And it's an awesome thing to do. And the whole point of Traktor, of course, is to foster real kind of relationships. I know it's a little bit difficult now, depending on what tier you're in, and because of the whole coronas thing and whatever, but it's just there waiting, it's sizzling, it's going to bring itself to the boil as soon as the coronas are all over. You'll be able then to have your meetups locally. And as I said in the meat and potatoes bit of the show, one of the great things is you can go on and you can look and see where there are clusters of dumdydummers, and you can then go message them one by one. So those people in Sydney, Australia, get it all sorted. Those people up in Edinburgh or, you know, New York, etc., etc., you know what you can do through dumdydum.com. And also big ups to people who have been purchasing things for their loved ones and maybe just for themselves over Crimbo. So you've been going on to the shop or the store, a bit of dumdydum.com. But thank you for giving us your shekel, because it doesn't half help get things sorted around here, especially as we've had to employ Jesse Bigley, as Donald Trump would say, to get Traktor up. Which brings me on to say that, of course, you can support the show by going on to patreon.com. And by giving us $2 per show, you help to support the whole enterprise here. Quentin didn't just work at the BBC for 40-odd years. How long were you at the BBC there, Quentin?
It was almost 36 years, yes.
36 years. Right. And you know what, folks? It's not cheap. He did his apprenticeship at the BBC, and here he is at Dumdydum, really getting his teeth into things. So, you know, we got to pay him his due. And as well as Jesse doing all the various bits and pieces. So, but jokes aside, if you like what we do, if you like the output, and if you really appreciate it, it brings you some level of joy and comfort. Our ruminations on the Archers. And if you do have some spare pennies, go on to patreon.com and give us $2 per show. Now, Friday of this week, on January the 1st, there will be a short little show where all the details of the charity and how we're going to support them will be given to you. So please dig deep, because we've all been shocked and somewhat moved by this storyline. And this is a way for us to kind of help rebalance the scales for people who have find themselves in modern day slavery. There's lots of great charities within the UK who are trying to combat it, not only worldwide, but also here at home.
Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message.
Obviously, Twitter is it's where you heard about Dumdydum, wasn't it, Quentin, via Twitter?
It was. God, that's a long time ago, isn't it? Yes, people were obviously piling onto the tweet along on a Sunday and through the week, but obviously the main one's the Sunday. And I kept seeing this Dumpty Dum keep popping up. I think, well, what is that? So I had a little fertile and I alighted upon the hallowed fields that are, that is Dumpty Dum. And here I am speaking nonsense to you. There you go.
Okay.
Yes. So I can't...
Anything but nonsense, Quentin. Anything but nonsense. but the whole point of that, folks, is just to say that, and just remind you that we have a presence on Twitter. Now, I did say last week we need some help on the Dum-de-Dum Twitter account. We have actually had a couple of people say that they'd like to help out. I want to get a little gang, a little quorum, because then it means that nobody feels the sole responsibility. So if you would like to help us out, if you'd like to log on and be tweeting as Dum-de-Dum, you know, when the shows, when the Archer shows go out, or maybe during the tweet along on a Sunday, email me royfield@gmail.com. Nice and easy email address. Or you can go on to Tractor. You can find me on there and just message me through that. And we'll get you all set up after the second week of January. Let's get Christmas out of the way and whatever. And then let's get three or four of you all together tweeting as Dum-de-Dum. And of course, on Twitter, you can find us. You can find Dum-de-Dum where we're at Dum-de-Dum. Auntie Kerry, oh gosh, stop calling her Auntie Kerry Burton.
She's not on this one.
No, I know. Listen, no, that was deliberate. That was deliberate though. You can find kind of semi-permanent host Kerry Warbis, where she's at Kerry Warbis, which is KerriWarbis. Uncle Pete Ficklin can be found at Pete Ficklin. Mr. Quentin Silver-Tongued, Silver Fox Rayner. Where can people find you on Twitter?
Funnily enough, they can find me at Quentin Rayner, which is at QUENTINRAYNER. And you are spelling my name correctly now, Roy.
To be fair, Quentin.
That's a real plus.
That is not me. That is Auntie Kerry Warburton that corrected the script, sir. I still got it wrong. Rosie P. Where can people catch up with you on Twitter?
You can find me at Porty Rosie, so it's PortyRosie.
Smashing. And I can be found at Royfield if you can be fussed to follow me. Of course, there is Facebook. And the good news is the US justice system is catching up with Mark Zuckerberg and his anti-competitive goings-on, trying to buy up all his competitors and putting a stranglehold on the competitiveness of advertisers wanting to put their wares on the internet. However, even though he's a little bit of a shitbag, Facebook in and of itself is not without its merits. Go onto Facebook, type in Dum-de-Dum, and you get Dum-de-Dum on Facebook. Big up to the Flickr posse. We're going to have a film club this Sunday. Now, if you like film, why don't you log on to the Flickr and see what film we're all going to watch and then talk about. And then we gather at 6 p.m. UK time, first Sunday of every month, and we talk about a film. So you've got approximately a week, just less than a week, if you want to join the film club to know what the heck we are going to talk about. So log on to the Flick app and you'll see what film we're all going to watch. You watch said film in your own time. And then this Sunday at 6 p.m. UK time, come join us. And we will have a right royal time going over a bit of film. There are other things you can do on the Flick app. You can also join the thread, Where in the World? I love me a bit of Flick app action. One of the lovely threads, which is just about winding down, is Christmas prep and restrictions. And goodness, Cheryl had a right royal looking meringue which she made, and Caroline P had a whole load of prawns which just looked utterly amazing, though I'm not really into prawns myself. And Phoebe Figalilly did a whole load of mince pies. So listen, go onto the Flick app, whatever your passion is, whatever you're doing, just talk about it there. It doesn't have to be about the Archers or the podcast, but big up to the Flick app posse.
Which film are you reviewing next then? So
you know what? That's a very good question. I realised this morning...
Fundamental.
Quentin. Well, stop it. somebody did make.
He's looking at the Netflix menu now, isn't he?
Look, shush. Pat Brown. Right. Yes. Pat Brown said we should do The Dead of Night. Ads Rayner said, "How about Sorry to Bother You," which is a film set in Oakland, California, my second home. There's a couple of suggestions, but I just put out a shout out this morning, basically saying, come on, chop, let's decide. And I want to go for a bit of a classic oldie. So I've got to make a decision in the next 48 hours, I think. So, but why don't you help me with that decision, folks, by suggesting what film we should watch and then review for this Sunday. Now, Quentin Rayner.
Yes.
I believe we've got all the way through the show and I haven't really asked you how your, well, haven't asked you at all how your Christmas was.
That's very kind. It's been all right. You know, obviously it's been limited like everyone else, but we managed to get all three of our kids back here in time. So that was lovely. So they've been here. We decided not to hook up with my wife's elderly father. So we had a big Zoom meeting between, he hooked up with all his 12 grandchildren and he stole the show. It was his first ever Zoom. And oh, wow. He's a retired vicar, but vicars are show people, really. You know, they perform. So he turned up with a whole load, a variety of hats and entertained the entire family by alternating anecdotes with different hats. So that was one of the highlights of Christmas. But we've had a nice quiet time. We went to see a lovely light show at Belton House, which is a National Trust property in Lincolnshire. And they put on a fantastic light show every year. So we went to that last night. More people there than I felt comfortable with, I have to say, pretty socially distanced. But you suddenly become very conscious, don't you, when there are quite a few people around you, but it was outside. You felt safe. So it's been nice. But the kids are heading back quite soon. So, you know, the heart-wrenching moment will begin, but it's been considering everything about this year. It's been a nice one. Thank you. How about you?
I've had a quiet one. It's been very, very peculiar for me. So I flew to Canada to be with kids. So I did 2 weeks worth of quarantine. So I'm in the in-laws and I'm just in a room and they've literally been knocking the door and they give me trays of food and then they're picking them up again. And I did that for 14 days, just as Southern Ontario went into proper super duper lockdown. So on Christmas Eve, all the shops are closed indefinitely, apart from essential ones. And they've tightened up the restrictions of going around to people's houses. So just as I came out of quarantine, it meant that all I could do for Christmas Day was to stand outside of my kid's house for 35 minutes, because this is Canada and it was cold, give presents and just, yeah, it was the most bizarre. So I flew all this way in effect for that. So I think I'm going to be off in the next couple of days because I basically can't really see the kids. So Noah came round on Boxing Day with his girlfriend and we stood in the garage of his grandparents for about 20 minutes. And you're not allowed to go into anyone's house. It's not a case of, you know, nominating bubbles. It's a case of if you're a household, a physical household, that's just it. So so I've had somewhat of a peculiar Christmas, but one which will go down in the annals. Go down in the annals.
Standing in a garage, very strange.
Yeah, that was it. But I hear that Santa, Rosie, was rather kind to you this year. He brought you a house in your stocking. Rather big stocking you must have there.
It was a very big stocking with a large garden and then the house almost blew up. It would have been good if Sandra had done some more safety testing. but it's all safe and secure now. I also have a beautiful Ambridge Addicts or Archer's Addicts map of Ambridge, which I also received on Christmas Day, which is super special.
Is that now above your fireplace?
It's going to be framed. I'm not sure where it's going to go because I've got a beautiful picture of a Finnish summer house above my fireplace, the doomed fireplace. Yes, I'm going to frame it because it's beautiful.
Right. Let's hope the Boundary Commission doesn't come in and change the whole map.
Route B.
Well done. Well done, you. Well, folks, there you go. We filled that funny bit of year between Christmas Day and New Year's Day. We filled it up with a dum-de-dum. Hopefully, you've had some entertainment. I think Quentin was quite good this week. How do you reckon Quentin did this week, Rosie?
I would say exceptional as always.
That's a bit toady in that. Come on.
That's brilliant. I'll take that. Check to the post. or a backs transfer these days.
Just do a direct transfer. That's fine for me.
Okay.
PayPal, even quicker. PayPal. Folks, hopefully you've had a good Christmas. Hopefully you've been with your loved ones a little bit longer than I was able to be with mine. And we'll see you the other side of the 70th anniversary episode, where you'll have Ficklin and Warbis, and they will be piloting the good ship Dum-de-Dum. And basically getting your calls on and how you thought that was. So this is me, Royfield Brown, saying ta-ra bit, toodle bit, see you later. What's your sign off, Quentin?
I think when I call her in, I say toodle pip, I think. So maybe it'll be toodle pip.
Rosalie Porty.
Stay safe. It's mine.
Oh, like that.
Stay safe.
Said very confidently. I don't know what the playout music is this week, folks, but you're listening to it right now. It's going to be corking. It's going to be awesome. Enjoy yourselves.